the James Suckling Podcast. Wine ratings, reports, interviews, and more.
The vineyards were planted in the early 90s. They are planted with Dijon clones, and we planted in the between the early 90s, and then we've actually replanted some. For the Grand Mère, for example, we replanted in 2011. Our journey with Pinot Noir is basically my father and I love Pinot Noir. And when I was going old, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a medical doctor. I practiced medicine for years. I'm now a volunteer doctor vaccinating since actually 2019. My timing was kind of crazy. It was my father's 80th birthday. I said, okay, now I go to volunteer doctor and then COVID. Anyhow, long story, but you know, all this time I used to go with my father to France because he had to size up the competition, you know, see like how good these French wines were that were, you know, he wanted to make wines that could stand with the best of the world. And of course we went to Bordeaux and went to Burgundy. And, you know, we fell in love with Chardonnay, we fell in love with Pinot Noir. When we started experimenting, you know, we did very well with Chardonnay very quickly. You know, our first Chardonnays got high ratings. They were good. You know, they're still good. White Stones and White Bones are, you know, probably the best known Chardonnays from the Southern Hemisphere. But Pinot Noir was really the heartbreak grape. But Pinot Noir was always difficult. And, you know, throughout the 90s, at first, actually, we had a few really good vintages at the beginning, you know, when in the late 90s, from the Domingo Vineyard where Grand-Père and Grand-Mère are. Because of that, we planted in Adriana, you know, or in the same location, Guadalajara, in a separate part of the vineyard. That's where Histoire d'Ar and La Savante come from. But then we had like kind of like what I call the dark ages, you know. So, you know, the early 2000s, the vineyards were really high yielding. And actually people in Burgundy will tell you this. They'll say, listen, you get some really good fruit on year 3, 4, and 5. And then, you know, it becomes overproductive. And we didn't know what we were doing wrong. We were getting rot. And we almost like became discouraged to the point where we said, can we make a great Pinot Noir in Argentina? And, you know, in around, you know, in like the 2006, Alejandro and I decided, you know, we're going to really do something important with Pinot Noir because we were tasting the grapes. And now the vineyards have kind of calmed down. The yields had come down naturally.
Yeah. Understand the harvest time, everything, the making. Yeah.
And so in 2006, we said, we're now going to micro vinify Pinot Noir. And it literally took us until 2016 to get to parcel wine that we thought were at that level where, you know, we thought we had found a terroir, a new terroir for Pinot Noir in the world. Because like a lot of people in Argentina have tried to make Pinot Noir, but it's not interesting. It tastes either too herbal or too ripe or I don't know. And finally,
Pinot Noir is too ripe and too much ripe. Color.
Yeah. And
put like, Malbec sometimes.
You're wondering, like, did they put some Malbec in this? You know, like
or some Syrah.
Yeah, or some Syrah.
Yeah, sure. Syrah and Merlot. Yeah.
You know, both. Yet, you know, Piero, and the other challenge was, you know, I loved Piero's wine from Chacra, but I knew that we had that kind of quality also in Mendoza. And it was almost, I actually told Piero, I said, Piero, listen, we can make as great a Pinot Noir in Mendoza as you're making in Patagonia. And he's like, Laura, that would be great. I would love some company. He said, I'm so alone with Pinot Noir. Like he's so wonderful. I adore him. And he's been like our greatest cheerleader. And he was so happy when he tasted Domenico. He said, okay, Laura, I'm worried. Because, you know,
he's got competition.
So yeah. So I'm trying to think. So maybe, so Grand-Mère and Grand-Père come from a location right by the Domingo Vineyard. It's very stony soils. And, you know, this was our first cool climate Pinot Noir. This is really zone 2, you know, so it's not zone 1. It's a little warmer. But that's why I think that the Grand-Mère and Grand-Père are very generous wines. Now, the Grand-Père is much older. It was planted in, I just want to see here. Well, in my chart, it says 1995. So that's what it must be. But this is Dijon clone 115 is the Grand-Père. Now, the Grand Mère, we replanted in 2013, actually, and it's clones 667 and 115. 115 has been the biggest success for us in Argentina, but the 115 for 10 years was so productive that I honestly didn't even think we could make great wine from it. But then literally once it passed those,
many great does.
Yeah, once it passed like the 8, 9, 10 years, it calmed down. And now we know how to farm it correctly. We know how to deal with the cover crops. Some years, if we have certain years, we actually have to drop some fruit, which we no longer do with Malbec. Our Malbec vineyards are so old that we don't drop fruit ever because we treasure every little grape. But the Pinot, for the younger, like for the Grand Mère, we some years we have to pull a little, you know, do a little green harvest. But we like to get to a point where we don't have to do anything. Then the La Savante and the Histoire d'Art come from close to in the same location as Adriana. We have two parcels, so it's at 1,350 meters above sea level. And this is a clone, Dijon clone 115, implanted in 1998. And it's 1.75 hectares. So one of the issues with these wines is we don't have a ton of it planted, so we can't make a lot more. And it's been a problem because the wines have just flown away. You know, we release them and they're gone. But we wrote it in your sheet, but it's like, you know, a couple hundred cases. And the soil here is again this like somewhat superficial with a lot of stones, and then the La Savante is a little higher. So if you remember, you're looking at the vineyard, so the La Savante would be closer to white bones and white stones, and the Histoire d'Art is a little closer to the Malbec parcels.
Right.
Yes. So so this is, you know, 1450 meters. So about 100 meter difference between La Savante cooler, you know, a little higher, and Histoire d'Art a little warmer. And you can tell like Histoire d'Art is a little more generous. You know, I always feel like it's still cool climate, but La Savante is more, it has that kind of brooding thing that, you know, that we saw in the Mundus, you know, it's like a little more closed and it takes, I usually tell people to open La Savante the day before and just kind of wait on the bottle. So if you're able to do that, but the soil is not that different. And then the Le Paradis, this is like, you know, the place that we're all in love with. So it's this vineyard. Actually, Alejandro, can you show that photo again that you were showing with all the different locations, the map?
Here is La Savante. No, sorry. La Savante is here.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
Hey.
Okay, good. Oh, that's perfect.
And here is Histoire d'Art.
Yes.
Okay. And from here is Grand-Père, Grand-Mère from here.
So see, it's a little lower in altitude. I think I told you before, it's like 1120 for Grand-Père.
I think they're on the bottles as well, actually, the altitude. Oh, I
think
they
are.
Remember.
Yeah, you're right. I think they are.
I remember looking at them yesterday.
You know why I do that? So that I remember when I'm tasting it, because I can't remember all these things. Great. And then where can you point to Claire exactly where Le Paradis is?
Le Paradis is here. One second. Ahí, ese puntito que está acá es Le Paradis.
So if you
I was very impressed with Le Paradis, I have to say.
Yeah. Here, La Savane, and here is Histoire d'Art. Paradise.
Histoire d'Art. Yeah.
Paradise, here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Pero Le Paradis es Cuarta Sería Alto.
Sí, pero entra justo en monasterio, por suerte. Es este tipo de suelo. This is the new the pairing for different soils in Gualtallarí. This part of the Uco Valley is Gualtallarí. And we separate for different soils with different name. In Monasterio, we have the three parcels of Domenico. And from here, his grandparent, Domingo.
And Monasterio is also where the Adriana vineyard is and the parcels of Adriana. Yes.
Todo esto es Adriana. Esto y esto.
So this is important. Alejandro, I just want to tell Claire, this is really important because Gualtajarí, the denomination, we wanted it to be a really smaller area. And, you know, people complain that they want it to be a larger area, which I understand, you know, it's everybody wants to be part of something fashionable and not just fashionable, but where the best wines are coming from. But this area of Monasterio compared to everything in lower altitude is so much better. You know, it would be like saying that Entre de Mer and Pauillac are in the same region. You know, I mean, I like both, but you know, Pauillac is Pauillac, you know.
Yeah. Laura, here is 3,000 feet and here is 6,000
feet. You're right.
Total different altitude. Right. You have different altitude, different temperature too, different soil, different everything.
So you're basically going from around 1,000 meters to 1,600 meters. And so it's so different, but no. So the good win that we've had is that they're now considering naming the different parts of Gualtajarí, which I think would be great because then, you know, more people get to use Gualtajarí, but the regions that are so special also get labeled as Monasterio, which is where we think are the best wines coming from.
Hay 221 hectares en total, algo mil casi, 423.
Yeah. Le Paradis is this very special place, Claire, that it was really hard to buy it because it was owned by this family and they were having insider fighting. And finally, they sold us these 12 hectares. And it's so beautiful, Claire. You have to come. It's so magical. And the reason I call it Le Paradis is because when I got there, I said, this is paradise. And, you know, I started calling it, the Domenico wines have all these French references because I have, you know, I'm a little bit of a Francophile. As you can see, I studied French when I was very young in school. And I almost minored in French when I did my undergrad at Harvard. Like I was I was one class away from being able to minor in French. And so the names for this Domenico came in French. Like I woke up in the middle of the night with all the names. And
Nico is for Nicolas.
So actually my daughter, her name is Nicola, like her great grandfather, which it was a big fight with my father because he said, you can't give a girl a man's name. And I said, I can do whatever I want, you know? And I asked my brother and my sister, I said, do you want the name? And they said, no, we're fine. We already have our kids' names. So we're not having any more kids. I said, okay, she will have her great-grandfather's name, but we call her Nico. And I have another wine called Luca, which you've probably tasted. That's her brother. So she always said, why isn't there a wine named after me? And I actually had trademarked Nico, which is not, like, it's amazing that I was able to get the trademark. But, you know, 20 years ago, it was a lot easier to trademark things than it is now. So I have the trademark internationally. And so I thought, okay, it's going to be very hard to come up with another name this good. And so I called it Domenico. Really, you know, it was 10 years of work until we got to where we wanted. And now we are loving the wines and we're consistent. But honestly, I think that in terms of age, Pinot Noir is the most age-sensitive grape. I think Malbec, you know, a five-year-old Malbec, a six-year-old Malbec can be quite good. Even a Cabernet.
You mean the age of the vines?
Yes, the age of the vine. Yes. Pinot Noir is so crucial. You cannot make a great Pinot Noir until the age, at least 8 years, I think. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and even better if it's 15 or 20.
I like how you described it earlier as the heartbreak grape. I guess you have to be very, very patient and persistent with it.
Yeah, you absolutely do. It's very difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a real difficult.
And you can't be tempted. You know, all the work we did with Malbec of the selections and figuring out how to make a great Malbec. You know, Pinot Noir, we didn't know about, as much about Pinot Noir. So with Malbec, you know, we knew what it tasted like. We knew what would happen. We had all this historic knowledge that we even had that for Cabernet Sauvignon because, you know, before Malbec, before my father made Malbec famous again, most Argentines who drank fine wine were drinking Cabernet Sauvignon.
All people bring Cabernet Sauvignon in Argentina.
Yeah. And
in the 80s, white wines.
That's right. And white wines were
the more important.
But I think definitely there is a place for Pinot Noir where you are because just from memory from tasting them yesterday, they had this amazing quality of being very intense in their flavors, like the Malbec. So with this sort of like ripe but also savory character, you know, you have your classic mushrooms, but also this like earthy olive deep character. But then they're so fresh and vibrant and, you know, super silky, super fresh.
You remember it's the temperature is very similar for Burgundy. That in the end, we have this point and soil that is limestone soil.
And high altitude, but then you have your intense sun, which gives it this intense flavor.
And with one thing you have to be careful with Pinot Noir is you cannot remove leaves because Pinot Noir needs a little more shade. Like Malbec loves the sun. Like, well, you shouldn't remove too many leaves with Malbec either, but Malbec can tolerate the sun. With Pinot Noir, you need to leave a decent canopy because too much sun is not good. You want nice sun, cool climate, well-drained soils.
We planted the Pinot Noir for in the middle of the day. The idea is the high light intensity, not is in the fruit, is in the leaf.
In the leaf, right?
We planted in orientation for all time. The soil is here, no? No sé, la dirección que plantamos para que
sun,
no
sun. Yeah, so that the sun is never straight on the clusters.
No,
the clusters.
Because
you, with the Pinot Noir, you know, you don't want overripe ever, you know. You know, to keep that tiny touch of herbal that with the fruit is spectacular, or what you maybe called olive, you know, it's, you have to have that. And if you have too much sunlight, you don't have it. So literally, I mean, we have been working on Pinot Noir for 30 years and finally we're happy with what's happening, but we were many times almost thinking of giving up. And then, you know, we would make one parcel that was amazing. And we'd say, no, we can't. And then with Domenico,
I'm really happy you didn't. Says,
yeah, no. And then,
Laura, yeah. I remember the first time, the time of the variation harvest is around 100 days. And today is 40, 50 days.
Yeah.
The hand time is the middle.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Change a lot.
Yeah, we were also, I think we were doing many things wrong, but we were also dealing with younger vines in, you know, there's just a lot of different things that we needed to learn. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, we do so well with Malbec and why it took us longer with Pinot Noir. It should be that way. We didn't speak the Pinot Noir language, you know, and we had to learn it. And I think that's where the Catena Institute has been really helpful in that we could do so many microvinifications. I remember one year with Alejandro, we had like, you know, 10 different treatments for the grapes when they came in. You know, it's like 10% whole cluster, 20% whole cluster, you know, harvest, you know, on this day, harvest 10 days later, having
different harvest
and
time.
It's
different.
Like, it was like, and that is a lot of work, but we don't have, you know, the 1,500 years of Burgundy or 2,000 years of Burgundy making wine. So how do we catch up? It's by doing research. And so that you can say this worked really well in this place. That's the other thing. What works in one place might not work as well in another place. And we don't have that historic knowledge from, you know, my grandfather didn't grow Pinot Noir. And so I think it's been a real journey. And I'm so excited because 16 was this very unusual year, very cool. And I'm excited that we continue to make great wines from the different parcels. And it's very exciting. Yeah. And I think that the learning from Malbec actually helped us with the Pinot Noir because, you know, we figured out how to, you know, keep these differences alive.
For sure. And the way that you make your Malbec is how you could also make Pinot. So I guess you can cross learn from both of them, both different projects.
Yes.
Well, that was amazing. Really fascinating discussion.
So amazing. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Claire.
Thank you, Laura.
Alejandro.
Thank you, Alejandro.
Okay, ciao. Okay, see you later. Bye. Thank you.
Ciao, ciao.